Thank you for joining me for today's Beastwatch News Update. News from the Internet's most comprehensive Bible prophecy news website, BeastWatchNews.com. I'm Kimberly Rogers Brown. What in the world are the kings of the North and South doing this week? Preparing for war. President Donald Trump's as yet unreleased peace plan may play a role in the further provocation of the King of the North by the King of the South. Also, Netanyahu called for Cyrus Trump to allow the Jews to rebuild the temple. At least that was one of the implications in Netanyahu's AIPAC speech this week. Stay tuned to find out the result of that request. And will God even allow a third temple to be built before this one simple prerequisite is fulfilled? I'll tell you what that prerequisite is in today's report. Stay tuned. Sputnik News reported this week that Israel is not interested in the escalation in Syria, but will respond if Iran continues to provoke the situation on the Syrian border, the Foreign Ministry Deputy Director General Alexander Ben-Zvi said on Monday. According to him, Iran's military presence in Syria allegedly escalates the conflict, while Israel will make every effort to prevent it from becoming permanent. Interestingly, Israel's complaint that Iran is provoking the situation is actually what Daniel 11:40-45 says the King of the South will do, provoke the King of the North. Now, Israel is not the King of the South, but it is a member of the King of the South's coalition, which includes Israel, Egypt, and Jordan. Who is the King of the South? The King is Saudi Arabia, governed by the House of Saud. One pundit calls the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman the godfather of the region, rightfully so. The King of the North, though, has its own coalition, the 4+1 coalition, comprised of Iran, the King, Syria, Iraq, and Hezbollah, and backed by Russia. The United States, of course, is the backer of the King of the South's coalition. So Israel, who is actually doing Saudi Arabia's bidding, also accuses Iran of provocation. And Israel is right to the extent that both sides are provoking the other. But Daniel makes it clear that there will come a final provocation by the King of the South that will cause the King of the North to ride conquering and to conquer. Tehran, for its part, denies any culpability for the problems between the northern and southern Middle East regions. Iran has repeatedly denied Israeli and U.S. claims of Iran's military presence in Syria as groundless, although it has admitted sending military, quote-unquote, advisors to help Damascus fight terrorism. This is despite being presented with the truth of the depth of the Revolutionary Guard Corps involvement in the fighting. This is more than advising, in my way of thinking. Israel has another problem, though. Russia is a larger occupier of Syria than Iran, according to Sputnik News. Russia greatly increased its military presence under Obama, but under Trump, Russia has become much more aggressive than it was under Obama. This increase in aggression is directly due to Trump's deal with Russia last summer. It was a deal for the U.S. to withdraw from certain areas, deflate U.S. troops, and stop supplying rebel militias fighting in the Syrian army. One area that Trump handed over to Russia was de-escalation zone 4, the borders of Israel and Jordan. Under Russia's watch, Iranian Revolutionary Guard, Shiite militias from Iraq and Syria, and Hezbollah are now sitting only minutes away from Israel and Jordan's borders. Israel continues to call for the withdrawal of the Shiite troops, saying it is necessary to stabilize the situation in the southern de-escalation zone. General Alexander Ben-Zvi said in an interview, "The fact that the situation in the southern de-escalation zone, has not completely stabilized, this is understandable, because it is necessary, according to the agreements, to withdraw the Shiite troops to a certain distance from the line. This is not implemented yet, but this is exactly what we are working on now." Well, General Ben-Zvi, I would not count on Russia or Iran withdrawing any of their troops anytime soon. So good luck with that, and go read your Bible, sir. The U.S. is attempting to keep Lebanon's Sunni government under Saad Hariri from flipping into Hezbollah's Shiite camp, according to The National, as part of a bid to keep Lebanon from joining forces with Hezbollah and keep Lebanon out of the regional confrontation. To that end, this week, Riyadh sent an envoy to Beirut to deliver an official invitation to Hariri to come to Saudi Arabia. Recall that last November 3, 2017, Hariri was summarily summoned to Saudi Arabia and forced to resign his office. He did not resign in what was seen as a defiant move against Saudi Arabia, and one which showed that the House of Saud does not have complete say in the matters of state of the nations who are in coalition with them. The Saudi crown is now using Nasir al-Ula to communicate with Hariri. Al-Ula is a more affable and diplomatic man, a major contrast to his incendiary predecessor, Tamer Saban, who so rudely summoned Hariri last fall. After last November's coup gone wrong, Tamer was accused by Lebanese and Western officials of acting like a pyromaniac of Sunni-Shiite relations in Lebanon and in the region. It appears now that the Saudis are trying to smooth over that situation, and, well, they should. No one wants the Sunni Lebanon camp falling in with the Shiite Hezbollah. But one question still hangs over the present moment, however. Is Hariri's departure to Riyadh this week truly a visit, or was it a softer summons? Hariri headed to Riyadh the very next day after al-Ula arrived in Beirut. The Saudi envoy was supposed to stay the week, but Hariri was obviously in a hurry to meet with his mentors again, or is it the other way around? In fact, he left 24 hours after al-Ula landed in Beirut, forcing the new envoy to shorten his stay and accompany the prime minister to Riyadh. This sounds to me like a man on a mission. Not all of the details of his stay in Riyadh are yet available. In November, a squad of royal guards met Hariri at the airport and immediately confiscated his phone and those of his bodyguards. This time, a number of high-ranking Saudi diplomats greeted the landing of Hariri's plane, and he met with King Salman the very next day. And Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman granted him an audience only 2 days after that, suggesting that the reconciliation is still incomplete. All the same, the media blackout supposedly reflected the fact that he had been busy there, engaging in series of confidential meetings with numerous officials with whom he discussed Lebanon and the region. Will this be enough to keep Sunni Lebanon from uniting with Shiite Lebanon? In a speech that Hariri gave to commemorate his father's assassination, he said, "We are a party that refuses to strike any electoral alliance with Hezbollah." The next day, he met Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, to whom he publicly said, "Lebanon remains committed to disassociation from regional conflicts, one of the kingdom's main demands." Obviously, the message was heard, and the implicit request for help duly noted. Other political moves are starting to shape the Middle East as Hezbollah has now taken up the cause of the Palestinians. This is one reason the Saudis are trying to make up with Lebanon's President Hariri. The Saudis are concerned by Hezbollah's growing influence among the Palestinians recently. Hezbollah's concern could turn deadly because of the progress in American preparations to release President Donald Trump's deal of the century to solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Diplomatic sources claim that the Saudis are preparing for significant developments after the ripening of Trump's deal of the century, and that they are therefore trying to increase their efforts against Hezbollah. It may be that Trump's deal of the century will be one of the final, if not the final, provocation against the King of the North that will start this war. Saudi Arabia, the King of the South, being in alliance with Israel now, appears to have the control over all three of Islam's holy cities, Mecca, Medina, and Jerusalem. Surely, this is an irritation to Iran, who wants to have control of those same cities. And then there is this complication that it is possible, whether consciously or unconsciously, that Donald Trump secretly believes he is in control of Jerusalem. No one can see into another's heart, but if I'm right that he is from the line of Gog descendants trying to restore his forefather Reuben's birthright as the Patriarch of Israel, Trump may well see himself as the owner of Jerusalem, and he will fulfill the end-time role of Gog. If so, this could also be a way that Ezekiel 38 will be fulfilled when it says that brother will fight brother, because Saudi Arabia and the U.S. could split ways over who is in control of Jerusalem. Remember, Jerusalem is the prized possession, and possibly the spoil Ezekiel talks about. President Trump has said he wants to be present in Israel for the opening of the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem. This week, AIPAC Chief Howard Kaur called for a Palestinian state during his address at the opening of the annual AIPAC Policy Convention. The audience responded with less than enthusiasm. Backlash happened rather quickly. Howard had told the 18,000 attendees that everyone must work toward that future, two states for two peoples, one Jewish with secure and defensible borders and one Palestinian with its own flag and its own future. He also declared that there is no substitute for direct negotiations and there are no shortcuts to peace. You can't do it through the United Nations, not through the European Union, and not through Moscow, he said. That leaves out the United States from his list of nations that Howard believes cannot lead the peace process. So apparently Howard thinks President Trump can negotiate a peace deal. I wonder who paid him to say this. You see, some, maybe most Jews, are not happy about the terms of the leaked deal. Trump may have thought he could sway Jewish opinion at this AIPAC convention. It didn't work, however. Jewish press reports that the Zionist Organization of America is deeply concerned about the recent Arab media reports outlining contents of the as-yet-unreleased Trump administration peace plan. They said if the reported provisions of the plan are true, the Trump administration's deal of the century would be the disaster of the century, and that President Trump's reputation as Israel's greatest friend would be destroyed. The Jewish press article said the Saudi newspaper's knowledgeable Arab diplomatic sources reported a peace deal that would include the following horrors: recognition of a Palestinian Arab state with its capital in eastern Jerusalem and including expanded areas in Judea, Samaria, beyond the areas currently under Palestinian Authority control. Such a state would be a Hamas-Iran PA terrorist state that would place Israel's largest population centers in the line of rocket fire and would throw 100,000 or more Jews out of their homes in Judea-Samaria, likely causing great unrest in Israel. This would create a Gaza-like situation on Israel's longest border. Namely, Israel gives up land and uproots Jews from their homes, synagogues, and communities, and receives rocket fire in return. It is time for the world to stop persecuting the Jews in their own territory. The 10,000 Jews expelled from Gaza were a national trauma and disaster. Some of the victims of the Gaza expulsion are still unemployed, unsettled, and their families were destroyed. Expelling Jews from their homes because they are Judea-Samaria Jews is inhumane and immoral. President Trump should not press an agreement that demands this. Such a partition would subject Jews in the western part of the city to constant fire and peril as occurred during those 19 years. The deal would end Jewish sovereignty over Jerusalem and internationalize the old city of Jerusalem. As I have explained in the past, Jerusalem is actually part of the temple. It is an outermost court in which the sacrifices, such as the Passover, were eaten. The sacrifices that required the offerer to eat the sacrifice were only permitted to do so within the walled area of Jerusalem. Thus, Yahweh believes his city is his. He has said it is his forever, and that his eyes and heart are there forever. Thus, those who pretend they can do something with that city that Yahweh did not intend are fooling themselves. You might think that people could do just about anything they want with the city because, after all, people were allowed to destroy the temple, right? Well, it turns out that Yahweh didn't say he put his name on the temple. He put his name on Jerusalem. So far, he has let the Gentiles trample his city for the sake of his name because it fits his plan to gather his people there at a particular time of his choosing. However, the book of Joel tells us that partitioning the city, as has already been done, and dividing his land of Israel, will result in some pretty tough conditions on the earth, namely the death of all but about 10% of the people. We can only suppose that the people involved in creating the destruction will die as well. In fact, they might die first. Joel 3:2. I will also gather all the nations and bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat and will plead with them there for my people and for my heritage Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations and parted my land. The old city is the actual biblical Jerusalem and the heart of the Jewish people's faith for thousands of years. It is never mentioned in Islam's Quran. Judaism's holiest places, however, including the Western Wall and the Temple Mount, which is the home of the biblical temples, are all located in the Old City. Only under Jewish-Israeli sovereignty have all faiths had access to their holy places of worship in Jerusalem. It is a pipe dream to believe that an international entity would secure Jewish and Christian access to our holy sites. The last time internationalizing Jerusalem was proposed in 1947 as part of the UN partition plan, Arabs seized the Old City and the rest of Eastern Jerusalem, murdered and expelled the Jews from their homes that Jerusalem's majority Jewish population had been living in for centuries, dynamited and destroyed 58 Jewish synagogues, denied Jews access to the Jewish people's holiest sites, and commenced persecuting Jerusalem's Christians. There is no credible reason for thinking that Israel ceding authority in this part of Jerusalem to any other power or authority would produce anything other than the endangerment and annulment of legitimate Jewish rights, properties, and interests in the city. Trying such a disastrous plan again is likely to lead to the same result or worse. A plan that carves up Jerusalem and removes Israeli sovereignty from the Old City and the rest of Jerusalem is unimaginable and a monumental mistake that may be about to be made by President Donald Trump. Giving a Palestinian Arab state $40 billion will most likely be used by the Palestinians exactly the same way that Iran is using its $150 billion from the catastrophic Iran deal to foment terror, and exactly the same way that the Palestinian Authority uses the foreign aid it receives now to give lifelong pensions, homes, and honors to terrorists who murder Jews. Moreover, we already know that a vast amount of the international aid that is given to the Palestinian Authority has consistently gone to illegal arms, terrorist groups, hate education, including $355 million a year to terrorists and their families. There is no earthly reason to think this will magically stop upon the creation of a Palestinian Arab state run by the same corrupt, pro-terror, anti-peace Palestinian Arab leadership. Also, to the best of our knowledge, the plan does nothing to end the PA's non-stop incitement and payments to Palestinian Arabs to murder Jews, and does not require rescission of the PA law that authorizes such payments. This plan does not entail the renaming of schools, streets, and sports teams named after Jew killers. No peace plan is workable with a Palestinian Arab government that incites and pays for murdering Jews and is thoroughly committed to Israel's destruction. The PA must show for at least 1 year that they have abolished and rescinded such odious pro-terror anti-peace schools before statehood is offered. Further, the plan could become even worse. According to PA Foreign Minister Riyad al-Malki, European Union countries are working to convince the Trump administration to make this terrible plan even more favorable to the Palestinian Arabs. Only two supposed benefits that Israel would obtain under this deal of the century, if it is true, would in reality give Israel nothing. The first supposed benefit to Israel is that the Palestinian Arabs supposedly would give up or not implement a right of return. However, the Palestinian Arabs have no right of return. The UN Security Council Resolution 242 simply called for a just settlement of the refugee problem. This was a two-way provision that also applied to securing a just settlement for the close to 1 million Jews who were driven out of their homes in Arab lands. Moreover, descendants are not refugees. There are only approximately 30,000 real Palestinian Arab refugees alive today. A just settlement does not mean that grandchildren and great-grandchildren of Arabs who left Israel at the behest of the Arab League in 1947, when the Arabs went to war against Israel, refusing the initial two-state partition, can now move in and overrun Israel. In a just settlement of the refugee problem, both Arabs and Jews would receive financial compensation. The close to 1 million Jews who were expelled from their homes and businesses throughout the Arab world are owed far more than may be due the 500,000 to 600,000 Arabs who left Israel. However, ZOA understands that the plan calls for the compensation of Palestinian Arabs, but mentions nothing about compensating the far greater claims of the greater numbers of Jewish refugees compelled from Arab lands. Further, the Palestinian Arabs have received benefits from UNRWA for the past 70 years that may very well far exceed their claims. It's important to remember that every promise the PA has made in its signed agreements has been broken. The minute the ink was dry on an agreement, the Palestinian Arab state would once again demand a so-called right of return. The second purported benefit to Israel is an agreement that certain major Israeli communities in Judea Samaria can remain where they are and Israel would retain control of the Jordan Valley. However, Israel and the Jewish people already have the legal right to settle, live in, and control all of Judea Samaria under binding international law, including under binding international law that the United States is a party to. That's the Anglo-American Convention of 1924 and Article 18 of the UN Charter. To limit Jewish presence to the small areas covered by major settlement blocks would mean taking away Jewish rights. To allow some Jewish security presence and allow Jews to remain living in the lawful Jewish homeland while throwing out their nearby Jewish neighbors is not a net benefit. In sum, the reported plan amounts to Israel giving up tangible land and sovereignty in return for empty promises and entails the establishment of a terror regime in Israel's heartland. Worse, as we have previously demonstrated, there is no way such a state could be demilitarized. No sovereign state has previously either agreed to or been successfully compelled to demilitarize, nor could this be enforced, even if Palestinian demilitarization were an explicit term in any peace settlement. I sincerely hope that the reports regarding the contours of the Trump administration's peace plan are false. If the current Trump administration plan really is, as Ashark Al-Assad reported, we strongly urge the Trump administration to rethink this disaster and go back to the drawing board. This is where I will do something I rarely do, which is ask you to contact President Trump to tell him you do not want this plan implemented. Yahweh must see that his people are against the defiance of the world regarding his holy city. Those who stand up for Jerusalem will be blessed. Those who do not will be cursed. After the Iran deal, we don't need to create another catastrophic, destabilizing Middle East deal. We strongly urge the Trump administration to also insist that before any peace plan can be placed on the table, agreed to and implemented, the PA must end its anti-Israel incitement, terrorism, and heinous $365 million per year of payments to terrorists to murder Jews for at least a year. to demonstrate that the PA is willing to live in peace with the Jewish state. Jewish press lays Trump's peace deal bare. The fact is, it may be as I have suggested for almost a year. Moving the U.S. Embassy to West Jerusalem may ultimately lead to a U.S. Embassy in East Jerusalem. However, it is unlikely that Trump would even whisper this possibility until he secures a deal or is close enough to securing one, because I think he is using moving the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem as a carrot on a stick. And with that stick, Trump might just be trying to blind the Jews by poking them in the eyes with the stick. According to Arutz Sheva, the deal gives Abbas everything and gives Israel nothing except Hamas, ISIS smack in the middle of the country. Other news about Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and President Donald Trump has to do with Iran, of course. Netanyahu used the AIPAC convention opportunity to tighten the alliance between Israel and the U.S. and between himself and Trump. In a meeting at the White House on Monday, Netanyahu praised his host, U.S. President Donald Trump, in unmistakably biblical terms, comparing him to the Persian king Cyrus. "I want to tell you that the Jewish people have a long memory, so we remember the proclamation of the great king Cyrus, the great Persian king," Netanyahu told Trump. 2,500 years ago, he proclaimed that the Jewish exiles in Babylon can come back and rebuild our temple in Jerusalem. First, let's just say that President Trump, while acknowledging Israel's ancient temple, has yet to declare that it should be rebuilt. In fact, rebuilding the temple is not a part of the not-yet-released-but-leaked peace plan. Another difference, though, is that the next temple does not pertain to only the House of Judah, known today as the Jews. So here is where I will insert a short lesson. The Jews are actually three tribes: Judah, Levi, and Benjamin. The next temple will include all 12 tribes. Restoring all 12 tribes back to the family of Jacob was the primary mission of Yeshua the Messiah. Ezekiel 48:31. The gates of the city will be named after the tribes of Israel. Three gates are to serve the north site, one named the Reuben Gate, one named the Judah Gate, and one named the Levi Gate. Oh, that's almost 67% of those gates. Those first three gates are from the house of Judah. On the east side, 4,500 units by measurement, there are to be three gates, one named the Joseph Gate, one named the Benjamin Gate, and one named the Dan Gate. So the one that's named the Benjamin Gate is 33% of the house of Judah and 67% of the house of Israel. On the south side, 4,500 units by measurement, there are to be three gates, one named the Simeon Gate, one named the Issachar Gate, and one named the Zebulun Gate. On the west side, 4,500 units by measurement, there are to be three gates, one named the Gad Gate, and one named the Asher Gate, and one named the Naphtali Gate. A perimeter is to measure 18,000 units, and the name of the city from that time on is to be "The Lord is There." So you see that these gates represent all 12 tribes. The final temple will only be built when the two houses, the House of Judah and the House of Israel, aka also known as the Lost Ten Tribes, recognize each other and come close together, as the scripture Ezekiel 37, where it says they come close together in man's hand. Ezekiel 37:16. Now as for you, son of man, grab a stick of wood for yourself and write on it these words, for Judah and the Israelites, his companions. Then grab another stick and write on it, for Joseph, the stick of Ephraim, and all the house of Israel, his companions. Then join them together end to end, so that they become a single, that is Strong's H259 Echad stick in your hand. Now, Yahweh's talking to Ezekiel here. What will happen in man's hand? In verse 22, the people are not just Echad, however. They're not just one. Now they become a nation. Listen to this, Ezekiel 37:22. I, this is Yahweh speaking, are Lachadim in the land, on the mountains of Israel, and I'll set a single king to rule over them. They'll never again be separate people. They'll never again be divided into two kingdoms. Our Torah group midrashed on this last Shabbat, where my friend Bob Parham pointed out the differences in the two different words in verses 17 and 22. Verse 17 is just plain old Echad, first, one, united. But verse 22, however, is Lachadim. Echad is the root word here, but it has a connotation of Yahweh doing something for his people that they are not able to do without him to become a nation. And until we decide to cooperate with Yahweh and start acting like brothers instead of enemies, Yahweh can't make us a nation. Thus, one of the purposes of the Great Tribulation. We're all going to get a great big spanking because we can't act right with each other. After the houses of Judah and Israel have decided to get over themselves, and their people begin to love each other instead of continuing in their baseless hatred of each other, then Yahweh will make us one, Echadim, Lachadim, in his hand. So, until the Jews acknowledge that we have a heritage right to Jerusalem and the temple, no temple decides to acknowledge Judah's place of kingship and authority, no temple. Capiche? The truth is, the next temple will not be allowed by Yahweh our Creator to belong only to the Jews. Why? Because Yeshua made a way for the lost northern tribes, the house of Israel, which the Jews will not acknowledge, to return to the Abrahamic covenant. This means that the temple and Jerusalem is part of our heritage now. And until the Jews acknowledge us, there will be no third temple. And until we acknowledge them, there will be no third temple. And this brings me to another truth. Trump messing with Judea and Samaria is messing with your inheritance. We should be furious, incensed, enraged. For right now, the United Nations created political state of Israel, which is not the same Israel as will be governed by the Messiah, must continue with the visible house of Judah, keeping the house of Israel still invisible to all but those whose eyes have been opened by our Elohim, Yahweh. Now, back to Netanyahu's comparison of Trump to King Cyrus. Let's continue to remember that Cyrus was at war for his entire lifetime. He made war all over the known world, never stopping until he died. Not only was Cyrus at war continually, but he conquered and destroyed his own Mede grandfather's kingdom. Rabbi Weiss, publisher of Breaking Israel News, says this. He believes what I just said a couple of minutes ago. that Trump's success will hinge on whether his agenda continues to support not just the Jewish connection to Jerusalem, but more specifically, the Temple Mount. And he noted that both Trump and Mike Pence have referred to the Temple Mount by its Islamic name, Haram al-Sharif. More, it has been reported that Trump's peace plan would include the creation of a Palestinian in parts of Jerusalem. From watching the news during the past year, we can see that Trump is like Cyrus in this way. He presides over a nation that has the most military bases spread all over the known world, more than any other nations on earth. And it doesn't appear that President Trump is ready to pull American troops out of any of these nations. Aside from the praises the Prime Minister gave to President Trump, another issue was the main entree. That issue was Iran. The Prime Minister Netanyahu called on the United States to help Israel stop Iran's progression across the Middle East. This progression, as you know, will continue around the globe, but I promise you it cannot be stopped, despite Israel and the U.S.'s efforts. He said darkness is descending on our region. Iran is building an aggressive empire. Iran, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Gaza, Yemen, more to come. Now, Iran is seeking to build a permanent military bases in Syria, seeking to create a land bridge from Tehran to Tartus on the Mediterranean. That's been completed, Mr. Netanyahu, and I know that you know that. And in addition to moving its army, its air force, its navy to Syria to be able to attack Israel from closer hand, it is also seeking to build precision-guided missile factories in Syria and Lebanon against Israel. And he said, I will not let that happen. We will not let that happen. Well, Yahweh said it will happen. However, anyway, I'll go on and just tell you, he says, we must stop Iran. We will stop Iran. Really? I heard you had a Tuesday evening Torah study. Do you ever read the prophets? Last week, we read in the book of Esther about an earlier Persian attempt to exterminate our people. They failed then, they will fail now. That's true. We will never let Iran develop nuclear weapons, he said. Not now, not in 10 years. Not ever. Well, you know what, dude? They already have nuclear weapons. They already are in cahoots with nuclear North Korea. Anyway, oh yeah. Netanyahu wants the backer of the King of the South, you know, being the United States, Saudi Arabia. The United States backs Saudi Arabia. Netanyahu wants the United States to lead the war against Iran with Israel slightly in the background, but he said they'd be by the side of the United States. Well, this is as it should be. The United States has protected Israel, but there is the problem. Trump has already allowed Iran and Russia to make huge inroads in their quest to conquer the Middle East, Israel, and remove the U.S. from the region. And how did he do this? Oh, through that bad deal he made by himself, without advice from his military complex or his cabinet, with Putin, who is an experienced military expert and an excellent politician, beginning last summer and ending in the fall. This should tell you something about President Donald Trump's ego. He is not even in the same class with Putin when it comes to experience and leadership. Now, I realize that sometimes it sounds like I am anti-Trump and possibly anti-Israel, but I am not. You see, I have to compare the events to end time Bible prophecies. Unfortunately, this requires me to pull back the covers on the people who are playing the parts in Yahweh's end game. And quite often, it isn't pretty. Both Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu are short-sighted. One of their short-sightednesses is that neither can see the other's flaws. Netanyahu cannot see how Trump is opening the way for Iran and Russia to attack Israel. And Trump can't see Netanyahu's desperation. Now, this scenario must happen so that Yahweh can blindside both parties with attacks from Iran, ancient Persia. This is not happening by accident. It is being orchestrated by God Himself. Netanyahu also mentioned the brave people of Iran, saying that one day the historic friendship between the people of Israel and the people of Persia will be reestablished. Well, the truth is that a great percentage of Iran's population are Jews, leftovers from the tribes of Judah, Levi, and Benjamin, who didn't return to Jerusalem or Israel when Cyrus let them go. Only about 10% of the Jewish population of Persia went back home. These, by the way, are our modern examples of disobedient Hebrews who prefer Babylon then and Babylon now to returning home to their inheritance. In this way, those Jews are also prodigal sons still estranged from their inheritance, even if they are practicing Judaism. So the historic friendship between Israel and Iran has never really existed. But what has existed is a cultural and religious tie between the Jews in Israel and those in Iran. It is time for the Israeli rabbinate, the rabbis in charge of Aliyah, to insist that those Jews in Iran leave Iran before this war breaks out. Jew hatred in Iran will only continue to increase. The only safe place for Jews is in the land. Now, this does not mean that Jews in Israel won't die when the war breaks out. Huge numbers of them will, in fact. But dying in Jerusalem means to have died under the altar, even though the altar is not there at the moment. It is these souls, the ones who die in Jerusalem, who Yahweh will vindicate when they call out to Him from under the altar. Revelation 6:9. When the Lamb opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slaughtered because of the word of God and the testimony they had given. They cried out in a loud voice, "Holy and true Sovereign, how long will it be before you judge and take revenge on those living on the earth who shed our blood?" I want to share one other item with you that most of us were not taught in church. This is off the current subject, but it relates to what I've just said about the Jews who remained in Persia. You know those three wise men that traveled to find Yeshua? You know, the ones that knew about His birth and were expecting it? Well, all the Jews were expecting Him, but it was the Persian Jews and probably the local leaders of the Jewish synagogues who came to find Him. Those that came looking for the Messiah in Jerusalem from Persia were Jews. You know, the Persians had no interest in a Jewish Messiah. They had their own religion, but the Jews knew that the Messiah would come to restore His kingdom. So they went to find Him, and find Him they did. Now, the Greek word for those wise men in English is magi. In Greek, it's magos, meaning a diviner or sorceress, or sorcerer, rather. But another word for magos is astrologer. Why is this important? because astrology was a tool that Yahweh gave to the Levites. And the wise men were, I'm sure, Levites. Why were they Levites? Because it was the Levite tribe that was given the responsibility of watching the sky very carefully to fix the calendar from month to month and year to year. None of the other tribes were ever assigned the task or given the authority or permission to do this. Only the Levites were tasked with this by Yahweh. Thus, those magos, those astrologers, were most likely Levites. I thought you would find that interesting to finally know who exactly those strange men from Persia afar were. Understanding that the majority of Jews have remained dispersed from the first time of their exile provides us with some knowledge, doesn't it? That's it for this Beast Watch News update. This is Kimberly Rogers Brown signing off. Click over to BeastWatchNews.com for full comprehensive coverage of all the headlines fulfilling end of days Bible prophecy. Hi, this is Kimberly Rogers Brown thanking you for listening to the Jerusalem Report produced by BeastWatchNews.com and asking you to send your support, a donation of any size, to BeastWatchNews.com. It costs money to run ministries, to teach the word, interpret the prophecies, and to keep websites online. Trust me, we sure do appreciate it. And remember, you can read the transcript of today's broadcast under the Jerusalem Report at BeastWatchNews.com.